urging everyone to cooperate, stay off the streets. It's anticipated that a curfew will be put into effect tomorrow night. I think that the law enforcement people, fire personnel, the National Guard, Sheriff's Department, and all of the others who are joining in a coordinated effort are going to be able to keep this situation under control.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide.
Being fruitful and multiplying is about more than a woman's ability to obtain, hold down, and sustain life. This is about her generously planting seeds in minds, incubating them for 3 minutes of your time, and letting the mic go. Knowing God will help them grow, and every time you speak his truth, you will become fruitful. Multiplying his word, amplifying what's read, walking in what you heard, all the while planting seeds along the way. You see, anybody can make a baby these days, but can you evoke a thought in your listeners that will have them leaning sideways because they want to become your fertile ground? They want to catch your every verb and noun and use your flow to cause each seed to grow, making the manure that is pumped inside your mind by the media useful. Can you stand in front of children and speak in a level underneath speech because they respond to other stimuli, like if your words and your heart meet and reflect what the other has projected? We need to make sure the minds and hearts of our children are protected, nurturing more than just the wombs of newborns who are expected, making the spoken word tradition once again respected because God gave it to us and its power he perfected. In Genesis 1:28, when he told Adam to be fruitful and multiply, his words weren't rejected. He spoke to nothing and the world was erected. If you speak of nothing, then the world is neglected, infected with brainwashed dummies, well-preserved mentally dead mummies who are so wrapped up in themselves, they're okay with never being able to speak words that produce life, who are all right with never having to think twice because once was hard enough. About our children who are growing up claiming to be tough, speaking violence into existence and having their own words called their bluff, not realizing they just committed verbal suicide. We need to be fruitful and multiply in Baltimore City because the powers that be are unleashing an educational genocide, causing our young people to become dead children walking. This is what we need to do. We need to stand up, actively listen, and be cognizant of how we are talking. Tread lightly when we are walking because the fruits of a mother's labor are constantly watching and listening. You can see their eyes glistening. And if you look closely, you can see their minds processing every little thing you do, multiplying every action and becoming every negative epithet you spew. I wrote this for the youth so that they will know the truth. I wrote this for you to give of yourself because this is an emergency. I wrote this with a sense of urgency, like I've only got 9.5 more years to write because I was only given 33.5 years of life, so I'm preparing for my crucifixion right here tonight through self-sacrifice. And I'm engineering my resurrection from death's yoke with each pen stroke and every word I've spoke. I wrote this because when we are being fruitful and multiplying, speaking life to children dying, we're giving them a little bit of what they need most. And if you're wondering what that is, it's hope.
There is a greater amount of editorializing on radio today than there was in the past. Radio is obligated to not only allow but seek out those with responsible opposing views in order that the public may hear a fair balance of opinion on any issue.
KNX News Time is now 1:09, and we turn from Michael Ambrosini to our Bob Turr. He's been flying over a rather angry city in Chopper 1070. Right now, we understand he has maneuvered his way over 3rd in Vermont. We want to go to him for an update. Bob?
We've had a pull-off because of fuel considerations, but at 3rd in Vermont, 2nd in Vermont, we had a group of people looting structure after structure. And every time they would go in there and rip apart bars, get inside, start looting the building, carrying off other people's property, the LAPD would respond and push them back, and then they would go over to another shopping center and loot and destroy property. And it's sort of a domino effect. It's working itself way progressively further north on Vermont toward the Hollywood Freeway. So we have this situation moving closer to Hollywood from the areas of South Central up along Vermont Boulevard, now working its way as close to 2nd and Vermont toward the California Highway Patrol Station at the Hollywood Freeway. Things are not under control. The LAPD is on the scene, but they don't have very many officers. And as they get in there and they stop people from looting, these looters move off and loot another area. This all began at 3rd in Vermont when a three-story commercial structure, actually a three-story apartment house, caught fire. It was fully engulfed in flames. A crowd of several hundred people gathered to watch the fire. Then they saw some people looting in a shopping center, then over at a Vons, then at a Ralph's, and then at a Thrifty's. The LAPD moved in, stopped them from looting. Then these looters moved off to another shopping center, wiped out a commercial structure, wiped out a computer store, wiped out a toy store, moved across the street to a mini mart. Everything is being looted along Vermont Boulevard, and this is by several hundred individuals. Just craziness. Absolute craziness from our aerial perspective. We're picking up another 5 hours of fuel. We're going to be going over these hot spots again. That's a situation as we saw it. Reporting live, Bob Turkey, X Chopper 1070.
Bob, while we still have you on the line, you may have said this, I may not have heard it. How far north on Vermont are we talking about right now?
We're talking about less than 1/2 mile south of the Hollywood Freeway. So just above 3rd in Vermont, 2nd in Vermont, up toward Temple Street. So that's the situation. It's moving quite rapidly toward the Hollywood Freeway along Vermont.
It sounds, Bob, as though, and we were hearing and watching this morning when these police come in, if the people are looting stores, that the police will make a sweep from, say, one end of the parking lot where they are to the other. The people just move out and come in right behind them and start looting again.
That's the case. Look, you know, what do these people have to lose? They're not being arrested. They're not being shot. You know, they can go in there and they can go in and loot, and all that can happen to them over and over and over is that they can be pushed out of the area, yelled at, forced out of the area. The LAPD is showing an amazing amount of restraint. The question becomes: is that really what's required at this point? They're being very restrained. They're forcing these people over. One thing that really weighs heavily on you is if they do make these arrests, where are they going to put them? You know, where can they keep these people? And so they really can't take prisoners at this point. So all they can do is try to calm them down, move them off, and that's the situation.
All right, Bob, thank you very much. Bob Turr, who, as he said, is going back refueling. And he, of course, will be back up in the air throughout the afternoon, and we will be here with you throughout the afternoon and evening as long as it takes till they get things quieted down in the particular area where the disturbance has been going on. Right now, we want to go to Pete Moraga. We understand he is at 2nd and Vermont, and that's what Bob Turr was telling us about just a few moments ago. Pete, what's the situation there?
Well, that is correct. And what the police have been doing, they have been clearing the street now. They got the police lined up, and they cleared the street all the way down to 1st Street. On the south side, I would imagine it's down to beyond 4th. There was a report of shots fired over here on between 1st and 2nd. By the time I got out here, I didn't hear anything. But by the time I got out here, I did happen to see, as I was approaching, 3 men in handcuffs being put into a black and white. But no one will confirm whether or not there were shots fired. But the police have cleared not only the parking lots, but the streets. There's still a lot of people milling about at the Vons parking lot, and I would assume that they're going to start clearing that one up, too. The fire, which is just below Vermont on New Hampshire, appears to have been taken care of, and the smoke is still lingering on. So reporting from the corner of 2nd Street in Vermont, I'm Pete Moraga, KNX 1070.
All right, Pete, thank you. Stand by there because we may want to get back to you in just a moment. We've now received word that the mayor of Los Angeles, Tom Bradley, has now extended a sundown curfew to the entire city.
Wonder like I did during the LA riots when those people were being pulled out of their trucks and beaten half to death. How many of y'all wondered like I did? Step on the fucking gas, man! They're on foot, you're in a truck. I think I see a way out of this. It's that pedestrian right-of-way law. People are driving home, gang of youth stepped in front of their truck, Molotov cocktails, clubs in hand, every one of these idiots. I guarantee you that Reginald Denny, that truck driver, never gonna stop again as long as he lives. Can be an old woman with a baby carriage crossing the road. He's...
I don't know if you can, but can you get an order for Ons? That's O-N-S Junior Market. The address is 1934 East Anaheim. All the windows are busted out, and it's like a free-for-all here, and the owner should be able to come down here and see if he can secure his business.
From National Public Radio in Washington, this is a special edition of All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams. In just a moment, President Bush will be speaking live from the Oval Office, talking about Los Angeles and the response to the verdict in the Rodney King case. Presidential spokesman Marlon Fitzwater has said there is a national emotional response to the verdict that cries out for presidential comment. Earlier today, President Bush sent 1,000 federal troops to Los Angeles, and 4,000 Marines and Army soldiers will be moved to a nearby staging area. The Justice Department has opened a grand jury investigation to determine if the police officers who beat Rodney King could be charged with civil rights violations. So far, at least 37 people have died in 3 days of arson and looting and clashes with police, a level of violence that surpasses the Watts rioting in Los Angeles in 1965. Now here is President Bush speaking from the White House.
Two big issues that have collided on the streets of Los Angeles. First, an update on where matters stand in Los Angeles. 15 minutes ago, I talked to California's Governor Pete Wilson and Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley. They told me that last night was better than the night before. Today, calmer than yesterday. But there were still incidents of random terror and lawlessness this afternoon. In the wake of the first night's violence, I spoke directly to both Governor Wilson and Mayor Bradley to assess the situation and to offer assistance. There are two very different issues at hand. One is the urgent need to restore order. What followed Wednesday's jury verdict in the Rodney King case was a tragic series of events for the city of Los Angeles. Nearly 4,000 fires, staggering property damage, hundreds of injuries, and the senseless deaths of over 30 people. To restore order right now, there are 3,000 National Guardsmen on duty in the city of Los Angeles. Another 2,200 stand ready to provide immediate support. To supplement this effort, I've taken several additional actions. First, this morning I've ordered the Justice Department to dispatch 1,000 federal riot-trained law enforcement officials to help restore order in Los Angeles beginning tonight. These officials include FBI SWAT teams, special riot control units of the U.S. Marshals Service, the Border Patrol, and other federal law enforcement agencies. Second, another 1,000 federal law enforcement officials are on standby alert should they be needed. Third, early today, I directed 3,000 members of the 7th Infantry and 1,500 Marines to stand by at El Toro Air Station, California. Tonight, at the request of the governor and the mayor, I have committed these troops to help restore order. I am also federalizing the National Guard, and I'm instructing General Colin Powell to place all those troops under a central command. What we saw last night and the night before in Los Angeles is not about civil rights. It's not about the great cause of equality that all Americans must uphold. It's not a message of protest. It's been the brutality of a mob, pure and simple. And let me assure you, I will use whatever force is necessary to restore order. What is going on in LA must and will stop. As your president, I guarantee you, this violence will end. And now let's talk about the beating of Rodney King, because beyond the urgent need to restore order is the second issue, the question of justice, whether Rodney King's federal civil rights were violated. What you saw and what I saw in the TV video was revolting. I felt anger. I felt pain. I thought, how can I explain this to my grandchildren? Civil rights leaders and just plain citizens fearful of and sometimes victimized by police brutality were deeply hurt. And I know good and decent policemen who were equally appalled. I spoke this morning to many leaders of the civil rights community, and they saw the video as we all did. For 14 months, they waited patiently, hopefully. They waited for the system to work. And when the verdict came in, they felt betrayed. Viewed from outside the trial, it was hard to understand how the verdict could possibly square with the video. Those civil rights leaders with whom I met were stunned. And so was I, and so was Barbara, and so were my kids. But the verdict Wednesday was not the end of the process. The Department of Justice had started its own investigation immediately after the Rodney King incident and was monitoring the state investigation and trial. And so let me tell you what actions we are taking on the federal level to ensure that justice is served. Within 1 hour of the verdict, I directed the Justice Department to move into high gear on its own independent criminal investigation into the case. And next, on Thursday, five federal prosecutors were on their way to Los Angeles. Our Justice Department has consistently demonstrated its ability to investigate fully a matter like this. Since 1988, the Justice Department has successfully prosecuted over 100 law enforcement officials for excessive violence. I am confident that in this case, the Department of Justice will act as it should.
Did you guys see these cops testifying, man? Do these guys have balls or what, man? These guys carry their balls in a wheelbarrow, man. Excuse me, excuse me. Man with big balls is here to testify. Place your right testicle on the Bible. This guy, Officer Coon. Is life too weird or what? Officer Coon looks in the camera and actually says, "Oh, that Rodney King beating tape? It's all in how you look at it." Courtroom murmurs, "Jesus, what balls!" I've never seen balls of this magnitude. He must have a specially fitted uniform in which to place these large testicles. That's incredible. All in how you look at it, Officer Coon.
That's right. It's how you look at the tape.
Well, would you care to tell the court how you're looking at that?
Yeah, okay, sure. It's how you look at it. Tape.
For instance, well, if you play it backwards, you see us help King up and send him on his way.
I just want to say, you know, can we all get along? Can we get along? Can we stop making it horrible for the older people and the kids? And I mean, we've got enough smog here in Los Angeles, let alone to deal with the setting these fires and things. It's just not right. It's not right, and it's not gonna change anything. We'll get our justice. They've won the battle, but they haven't won the war. We'll have our day in court, and that's all we want. And just I'm neutral. I love people of color. You know, I'm not like they're picking me out to be. We've got to quit. You know, after all, I mean, I can understand the first upset for the first 2 hours after the verdict, but to keep going on like this, and to see the security guard shot on the ground, it's just not right. It's just not right, because those people will never go home to their families again. And I mean, please, we can get along here. We all can get along. We just gotta, you know. I mean, we're all stuck here for a while. Let's try to work it out.
Rioters in Baltimore threw bricks, broke windows, looted businesses, and burned patrol cars in violent protests following the funeral of a black man who died after he was injured in police custody. The riots broke out just a few blocks from the site of the funeral of 25-year-old Freddie Gray in northwest Baltimore, and then spread through other parts of the city in the most violent demonstration since the looting in Ferguson, Missouri last year. Television images showed mobs of rioters jumping on top of a police car, destroying a taxi and setting two other patrol cars on fire after crowds ignored calls to disperse and clashed with lines of hundreds of police. Local law enforcement said gangs had threatened to target police officers. Gray's death on April 19th reignited a public outcry over police treatment of African Americans that flared last year after the killings of unarmed black men in Ferguson, New York City and elsewhere. Police initially showed restraint, but then began arresting people and prepared to use tear gas and pepper spray. Gray's family, pastors and city officials had pleaded for peaceful demonstrations. Many have condemned the protests. US presidential candidate Hillary Clinton said she was praying for peace in Baltimore, whilst businessman Donald Trump called on police to get tough fast. New Attorney General Loretta Lynch met with President Barack Obama and updated him on the situation in Baltimore. Maryland's governor has now activated the National Guard, and the city of Baltimore announced a curfew for all residents to try to put an end to the violence and destruction.
Black Thought from the Legendary Foundation. Sending this one out to the people, you know what I mean? My people's in the streets of Illendale, the streets of New York City, you know what I'm saying? From the streets of Jamaica to the ghettos of London, word up. People's in the struggle in Paris, Cuba, South Africa, word up. Worldwide, Roots Crew, yeah. Open your minds to this one, Philly, Philly's joint friend.
And I think Ed brings up a point. I mean, if you say 10 p.m., you mean 10 p.m. This is the first night that certainly everyone needs to get used to this rule being in place. But the police department has to enforce. I think they will enforce, but I think they're taking their time at this point, trying to do it in the most peaceful way possible, again, with the world's eyes on them and how they're handling this.
So, Cedric, would you have done a curfew? Do you think that's the right thing?
Well, you know, here's the thing, Don. There's no easy answer to that. Every community is very different. If we go back to Ferguson, right, and the optics at Ferguson were absolutely horrible after they imposed a curfew. So what it appears to me that Baltimore is trying to do is do something a little different here, not be as confrontational, but, of course, they know they got to get the mission done.
Okay, so at this point, what do you do? Do you go in and start arresting people?
I think they do just what they're doing right now. We have to have confidence in Baltimore PD and its leadership right now. We have to have that confidence.
Chris, I want to get back to you because, Chris, we saw the young man with the mask on and his hands up and then almost hit by that armored vehicle. What did you do? Did you see that? What's going on?
He wasn't almost hit by that armored vehicle. They drove the vehicle up, and when it got close enough to create a wedge, they ran out and grabbed him, pinned him against that, and then arrested him.
This morning, I woke up in a curfew. Oh God, I was a prisoner too. Yeah, could not recognize the faces standing over me. They were all dressed in uniforms of brutality. Hey!
country, the man is using the N-word on live TV.
Nice.
No, a different one.
Oh, okay. N-word. You know it's bad when Ray Rice is your voice of nonviolent reason. The councilman is not a leader. He is a meek, cowering mouse who's crumbling under the weight of political correctness. They've abdicated their authority to the rabble to preserve their own power. They don't have the guts.
Eric?
So the councilman should not worry about whether the president uses the word thug or we use the word thug. It really doesn't matter. The N-word doesn't matter. What matters is 67% of African-American kids are growing up in a single-parent household.
Talked about, yeah.
We did talk about it. But that's what he should be addressing rather than what words we're using to describe what the riots were and or how they were.
Let me go to the word maven.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know how you knew that that's what is going through my mind, is that they have this. So if I was press secretary, you'd think, well, if they crossed the line from protester into what is allowed, what can you say? And maybe we need a new word.
What do you have to say to the businesses who were looted because of your order to stand down?
Can you excuse me 1 minute?
You don't have anything to say?
Nothing
to say to the business owners. What about to the police who are injured?
Excuse us, sir.
I'm sorry. Hey, excuse me. Hey! Why can't we ask questions? Why can't we ask questions, man?
That they said.
We can't ask questions?
You can't.
A public official? We can't ask questions?
Yes, you will have an opportunity.
I can ask questions?
Yes.
And you're gonna, and will you answer them? You'll answer our questions then now. Then you'll answer our questions?
At the press conference.
Excuse us. Whoa. And you heard her say, and the reverend say, that they would answer our questions at a press conference after the community meeting. She got up and spoke, the reverend got up and spoke at this community meeting that was at a church about a half a mile from here. And then during that whole period, the mayor ducked out the back, never answered our questions, and never held that promised press conference. Neil, so we'll keep asking.
Well, Leland, you'll be happy to know the reverend did. Here's what he had to say a few minutes after his encounter with you.
We were just walking in here now, in a church. One reporter stick his mic in her face. I'm from Fox News. You gonna answer? No. And start falling back like somebody pushed him. He'd be on tonight like we hit him or something. I tell you right now, just watch the circus tonight. Like somebody hit him. He start falling back and boom, boom. Play acting. Times are too serious to play them games. Because you try and incite a reaction and cover the reaction, the media needs to be responsible. Quit playing with matches in Baltimore.
One more thing. Yo, y'all know the time. I'm trying to eat in 99. I need more. Some taking this to the streets, right? They want war. The sheriff at the front door, he coming to hunt y'all. You got these devils at the back door. They want to confront y'all. They want y'all to pass like some type of gun law. They come in the night, then block out every border you can run for. Me, I'm a rocket launcher and militant monster. I'm self-sponsor. I light up the mic just like Ganja. Black thought in the flesh, no imposter. Power hilly. Thoroughbred soldiers ain't with the same silliness. That's uncertain, wrapped inside a steel curtain. Networking our shoulders, backs, and necks, hurting for real. So be supreme or just remain a mere person. Yo, you can find knowledge yourself or keep searching. Whoever in the crevice is thirsty, working beneath the surface. Y'all know the purpose, keep the streets burning.
The principle of peaceful, nonviolent protest and the observance of the rule of law is of the utmost importance to any society. Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Mandela, all great opposition leaders throughout history have always preached this precept. Further, it is critical that in any democracy, investigation must be completed and due process must be honored before any government or police members are judged responsible. That said, my greater source of personal concern, outrage, and sympathy beyond this particular case is focused neither upon one night's property damage nor upon the acts, but is focused rather on the past four-decade period which an American political elite has shipped middle-class jobs and working-class jobs away from Baltimore and the cities and towns around the United States to third-world dictatorships like China and others, plunging tens of millions of good, hard-working Americans into economic devastation. And then followed that action around the nation by diminishing every American civil rights protections in order to control an unfairly impoverished population living under an ever-declining standard of living and suffering at the butt end of an even more militarized and aggressive surveillance state. The innocent, hard-working families of all backgrounds whose lives and dreams have been cut short by excessive violence, surveillance, and other abuses of the Bill of Rights by the government pay the true price, an ultimate price, and one that far exceeds the importance of any kids' game played tonight, or ever, at Camden Yards. We need to keep in mind that people are suffering and dying around the United States, and that while we are thankful no one was injured at Camden Yards, there is a far bigger picture for poor Americans in Baltimore and everywhere who don't have jobs, who are losing economic, civil, and legal rights. And this makes inconvenience at a ballgame irrelevant in light of the needless suffering government is inflicting upon ordinary Americans.
An independent investigation coupled with the medical examiner's determination that Mr. Gray's death was a homicide, which we received today, has led us to believe that we have probable cause to file criminal charges.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
The statement of probable cause is as follows. On April 12, 2015, between 8:45 and 9:15 a.m., near the corner of North Avenue and Mount Street, Lieutenant Brian Rice of the Baltimore Police Department, while on bike patrol with officers Garrett Miller and Edward Nero, made eye contact with Mr. Freddie Carlos Gray Jr. Having made eye contact with Mr. Gray subsequently ran from Lieutenant Rice. Lieutenant Rice then dispatched over departmental radio that he was involved in a foot pursuit, at which time bike patrol officers and Nero Officers Miller and Nero also began to pursue Mr. Gray. Having come in contact with the pursuing officers, Mr. Gray surrendered to Officers Miller and Nero in the vicinity of the 1700 block of Presbury Street. Officers Miller and Nero then handcuffed Mr. Gray and moved him to a location a few feet away from his surrendering location. Mr. Gray was then placed in a prone position with his arms handcuffed behind his back. It was at this time that Mr. Gray indicated that he could not breathe and requested an inhaler to no avail. Officers Miller and Nero then placed Mr. Gray in a seated position and subsequently found a knife clipped to the inside of his pants pocket. The blade of the knife was folded into the handle. The knife was not a switchblade and is lawful under Maryland law. These officers subsequently removed the knife and placed it on the sidewalk. Mr. Gray was then placed back down on his stomach, at which time Mr. Gray began to flail his legs and scream as Officer Miller placed Mr. Gray in a restraining technique known as a leg lace, while Officer Nero physically held him down against his will until a BPD wagon arrived to transport Mr. Gray. Lieutenant Rice, Officer Miller, and Officer Nero failed to establish probable cause for Mr. Gray's arrest, as no crime had been committed by Mr. Gray. Accordingly, Lieutenant Rice, Officer Miller, and Officer Nero illegally arrested Mr. Gray. Upon arrival of the transport wagon driven by Officer Caesar Goodson, Lieutenant Rice, Officer Nero, and Officer Miller loaded Mr. Gray into the wagon, and at no point was he secured by a seatbelt while in the wagon, contrary to a BPD general order. Lieutenant Rice then directed BPD wagon to stop at Baker Street. At Baker Street, Lieutenant Rice, Officer Nero, and Officer Miller removed Mr. Gray from the wagon, placed flex cuffs on his wrists, placed leg shackles on his ankles, and completed required paperwork. Officer Miller, Officer Nero, and Lieutenant Rice then loaded Mr. Gray back into the wagon, placing him on his stomach, head first, onto the floor of the wagon. Once again, Mr. Gray was not secured by a seatbelt in the wagon, contrary to a BPD general order. Lieutenant Rice then directed Officer Goodson to transport Mr. Gray to the central booking and intake facility. Following transport from Baker Street, Mr. Gray suffered a severe and critical neck injury as a result of being handcuffed, shackled by his feet, and unrestrained inside of the BPD wagon. From Baker Street, Officer Goodson proceeded to the vicinity of Mosher Street and Fremont Avenue, where he subsequently parked the wagon and proceeded to the back of the wagon in order to observe Mr. Gray. Despite stopping for the purpose of checking on Mr. Gray's condition, at no point did he seek nor did he render any medical assistance for Mr. Gray. Officer Goodson returned to his driver's seat and proceeded toward the central booking and intake facility with Mr. Gray still unsecured by a seatbelt, contrary to a BPD general order. Several blocks later, Officer Goodson called into dispatch that he needed to check on the status of his prisoner and requested additional units at Dolphin Street and Drew Hill Avenue. Officer William Porter arrived on the scene near Dolphin Street and Druid Hill Avenue. Both Officer Goodson and Officer Porter proceeded to the back of the wagon to check on the status of Mr. Gray's condition. Mr. Gray at that time requested help and indicated that he could not breathe. Officer Porter asked Mr. Gray if he needed a medic, at which time Mr. Gray indicated at least twice that he was in need of a medic. Officer Porter then physically assisted Mr. Gray from the floor of the van to the bench. However, despite Mr. Gray's appeal for a medic, both officers assessed Mr. Gray's condition, and at no point did either of them restrain Mr. Gray per BPD general order, nor did they render or request medical assistance.
James Baldwin raises still another point about the whole nonviolent position and approach. He does not reject it in the ways that Malcolm X does, but he raises the question of whether it will be possible to contain the Negro people within this framework of nonviolence if we continue to have more of the kinds of demonstrations that we had in Birmingham.
Well, I think these brutal methods used by the Birmingham police force and other police forces will naturally arouse the ire of Negroes. And I think there is the danger that some will be so aroused that they will retaliate with violence. I think, though, that we can be sure that the vast majority of Negroes who engage in the demonstrations and who understand the nonviolent philosophy will be able to face dogs and all of the other brutal methods that are used without retaliating with violence, because they understand that one of the first principles of nonviolence is a willingness to be the recipient of violence while never inflicting violence upon another. And none of the demonstrators in Birmingham engaged in aggressive or retaliatory violence. It was always someone on the sideline who had never been in the demonstrations and probably not in the mass meetings and had never been in a nonviolent workshop. So I think it will depend on the extent to which we can extend the teaching of the philosophy of nonviolence to the larger community rather than those who are engaged in the demonstrations.
Well, how do you maintain this type of discipline, control, and dignity?
We do a great deal in terms of teaching both the theoretical aspects of nonviolence as well as the practical application. We even have courses where we go through the experience of being roughed up. And this kind of sociodrama has proved to be very helpful in preparing those who are engaged in demonstrations. The other thing is...
Does this even include the children?
Yes, it includes the children. In Birmingham, where we had several young from... we had some as young as 7 years old participating in the demonstrations. And they were in the workshops. In fact, none of them went out for a march or none of them engaged in any of the demonstrations before going through this kind of teaching session. So that through this method, we're able to get the meaning of nonviolence over. And I think there is a contagious quality in a movement like this when everybody talks about nonviolence and being faithful to it and being dignified in your resistance. It tends to get over to the larger group because it becomes a part of the vocabulary of the movement.
They're forming in a straight line now. They're going through a tight wind. And the kids are losing their minds. The blitzkrieg bop. They're piling in the backseat. They're generating steam heat. And pulsating to the backbeat of the blitzkrieg bop. Hey, let's go. Shoot them in the back now. What they want, I don't know. All revved up. Ready to go. They're forming in a straight line. And they're going through a tight wind. And the kids are losing their minds to the blitzkrieg bop. They're piling in the backseat. They're generating steam heat, pulsating to the backbeat of the blitzkrieg bop. Hey, let's go. Shoot them in the back now. Wind. And the kids are losing their minds. The blitzkrieg bop. They're piling in the backseat. They're generating steam heat and pulsating to the backbeat of the blitzkrieg bop. Let's go. The blitzkrieg bop. The blitzkrieg bop. The blitzkrieg bop.
I'm saying is this. I would like for all of us to believe in nonviolence, but I'm here to say tonight that if every Negro in the United States turns against nonviolence, I'm going to stand up as a lone voice and say this is the wrong way.
I will never change in my basic idea that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for freedom and justice. I think for the Negro to turn to violence would be both impractical and immoral.
There is an increasingly vocal minority who disagreed totally with your tactics, Dr. King.
There's no doubt about that. I will agree that there is a group in the Negro community advocating violence now. I happen to feel that this group represents a numerical minority. Surveys have revealed this. The vast majority of Negroes still feel that the best way to deal with the dilemma that we face in this country is through nonviolent resistance. And I don't think this vocal group will be able to make a real dent in the Negro community in terms of swaying 22 million Negroes to this particular point of view. And I contend that the cry of black power is at bottom a reaction to the reluctance of white power to make the kind of changes necessary to make justice a reality for the Negro. I think we've got to see that a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the economic plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years.
How many summers like this one do you imagine that we can expect?
Well, I would say this, we don't have long. The mood of the Negro community now is one of urgency, one of saying that we aren't going to wait, that we've got to have our freedom. We've waited too long. So that I would say that every summer we are going to have this kind of vigorous protest. My hope is that it will be nonviolent. I would hope that we can avoid riots because riots are self-defeating and socially destructive. I would hope that we can avoid riots, but that we will be as militant and as determined next summer and through the winter as we have been this summer. And I think the answer about how long it will take will depend on the federal government, on the city halls of our various cities, and on white America to a large extent. This is where we are at this point, and I think white America will determine how long it will be and which way we go in the future.
Even Senator Jacob Javits asked the question recently. He said that he was a slum resident, but he and some of his fellow Jews were able to make it out of the ghetto on the Lower East Side. The same thing is true with lots of Irish, Italians. And he asked the question why the Negro finds it so difficult to make his way up out of the ghetto.
Number one, no other racial group has been a slave on American soil. It's nice to say other people were down and they got up. They were not slaves on American soil. The other thing is that the Negro has had high visibility, and because of the prejudices existing in this country, his color has been against him. It's been against him, and they've used this to keep him from moving up. In the final analysis, when you say to a man that you are in this position because of your race or because of your color, you say to that man that he can never get out of it. Other racial groups have been able maybe to change the accent or change the names, but the Negro can't.
If you're lucky, and I say this to all of you for listening to this show, if you're lucky to meet an old wise man, that take that as a blessing. There's a famous quote in the book called the Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna says, they ask him, what's the fastest way to get to heaven? He says, it's not through charity, it's not through meditation, it's not through righteous acts. The fastest way to heaven is to spend time with wise men.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
It's the caffeine, the nicotine, the milligrams of tar. It's my habitat, it needs to be clean. It's my car, it's the fast talk they use to abuse and feed my brain. It's the cat box, it needs to be changed. It's the pain, it's women, it's the plight for power, it's government. It's the way you're giving knowledge slow with thought control and subtle hints. It's rubbing it, itching it, it's applying cream. It's the foreigners sightseeing with high beams. It's in my dreams, it's the monsters that I conjure. It's the marijuana, it's the embarrassment, displacement. It's where I wander, it's my genre. It's Madonna's videos, it's game shows, it's cheap liquor, blunts, it's bumper stickers with rainbows. It's angels, demons, gods, it's the white devils, it's the monitor, the sound man, it's the motherfucking mic levels. It's gas fumes, fast food, Tommy Hill, mommy's pill, Columbia House, music club, designer drugs and rhyming thugs. It's bloods, crips, fives, six, it's stick-up kids, it's Christian conservative terrorists. It's porno flicks, it's the East Coast, no, it's the West Coast. It's public schools, it's asbestos, it's mentholated, it's techno, it's sleep, life, and death. It's speed, coke, and meth, it's hay fever, pain relievers, oral sex, and smoker's breath. It stretches for as far as the eye can see. It's reality, okay, it's everything but me. On and on and on and on, the list goes on and on and on and on. The list goes on and on and on and on. The list goes on and on and on and on.
It's all according to that life on a whole. It's all according to that life. Life on a whole. It's all according to that life. Life on a whole. It's all according to that life. Life on a whole.
It's in the water, it's in the air, it's in the meat. It's indirect, indiscreet, it's inconsistent, incomplete, it's in the streets. Every city, everywhere you go, and every man, it's the insanity, the fantasies, the casualties. It's the healthcare system, it's welfare victims, it's assault weapons, it's television religion, and it's false lessons. It's cops, police, pigs with badges, guns and sticks. It's harassment and a complex you carry when you're running shit. It's wondering if you get to eat. It's the heat, it's the winter, the weather, it's herpes and it's forever. It's the virus that takes the lives of weak and the strong. It's the drama that keeps on between me and my seeds, mom. It's the need to speak wrong. It's that hunger for attention. It's the whack who attacks songs of redemption. It's prevention, it's the first solution. It's loose, it's out for retribution. It's mental pollution and public execution. It's the nails that keep my hands and feet to these boards. It's the part-time job that governs what you can afford. It's the fear, it's the fake. It's clear it can make time stop and leave you stranded in the year of the snake. It's the dollar, yeah. Pound, it's all denominations. It's hourly wages for your professional observations. It's on your face and it's in your eyes. Everything you be, cause it ain't me, motherfucker, cause it ain't me. On and on and on and on. The list goes on and on and on and on. The list goes on and on and on and on. The list goes on and on and on and on.
It's all according to that life on a whole.
Now, go find the others.com.
All in all, this has been a tough week, but we've seen the character of our country once more. And as president, I'm confident that we have the courage and the resilience and the spirit to overcome these challenges and to go forward as one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much, everybody.